This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo with Baseball Outside the Box. We are excited. It's going to be a great show. We are in St. Louis, Missouri, a great city. Matter of fact, we're staring at Busch Stadium. We are at the National High School Coaches Baseball Association Convention. You're not going to believe who I found here. It's just amazing. I mean, you're just not going to believe. I'm going to tell you in a minute. But before we start, don't forget, this is a show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds, and we've got two of the best coaching minds in the business when it comes to managing coaching, when it comes to coaching hitting. So we're excited about this show. I'm going to tell you about them. You know them both because, first of all, when I mention their names, you're going to go, wow, I've heard these guys quite a bit, and they are all over the U.S. and also around the world. First, Joe Ferraro, and then Kevin Wilson. Now, I know what you're going to say. I had Anthony Iapozzi the week before. I had Dana Cavaglia last week. You're going to think this is an Italian show. It's not. It's just a coincidence. Now, you're also going to think Kevin Wilson. That's not Italian. Come on now. You got to be kidding me. How can you say Kevin Wilson's Italian? Kevin Wilson is as Italian as Pete Caliendo from his mom's side. So we got three Italians that love to talk. And so I think it's going to be a great show. But Joe Ferraro, you know him from the famous podcast 1% Better. He's a 19-year veteran teacher and baseball coach, the youngest baseball coach, I believe, at the age of 22, 23. To begin college baseball, which is intimidating in itself. We got to talk a little bit about that. We're going to have all the show notes on baseballoutsidethebox.com. You're going to check out his 1% Better Project.com. He'll mention a little bit about that. He's a keynote speaker. He's traveling around the country now. And I got to tell you, both of these guys, you got to listen to their podcast. I listen to both of their podcasts all the time. So check it out. And Joe's on at Ferraro Air on Twitter. And then Kevin Wilson, he is definitely well known in the hitting industry. When I first met Kevin, was in Taiwan at the World Championships. He was the Team USA batting coach. And we're going to talk a little bit about that also. They won the gold medal at 18U. What a great thing. He's a professional hitting consultant. He has players from the minors and the majors with over 20 major league teams. He's a keynote speaker. Both of these guys are also, you're going to know it, they're pretty modest, but they are very good at what they do. So first of all, let's get the show started. I've done enough talking. We are in St. Louis, Missouri. This is the Hilton Hotel, so let's give them a little bit of a plug. And I want to welcome both Joe Ferraro and Kevin Wilson. First, Joe Ferraro.
Pete, man, it is going to be difficult to be humble if you keep giving me intros like that. So I couldn't have a better view. I got a Paisan, and I got the Midwest, and the Arch isn't far off. This is an unreal scene, so I'm honored to be here, man.
And by the way, it's great to have you. And folks, I forgot to mention, both of these guys are on stage tomorrow at 1 o'clock here in St. Louis. They're going to be talking hitting and coaching. So, and then I guess I'm the closer at the end at 5 o'clock when everybody's sleeping. So that I'm going to have to wake them up, bring a whistle, do something. And then there's Kevin Wilson, who again, very humble in everything he does. That's what I love about these guys. Kevin, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pete. It's great to see you again and be in St. Louis. And I brought my dad, Joe, with me, so it's just awesome to be here. And the three Italians, and like I said, and I will clarify, my mom's maiden name was Baldassi, so we'll clean the air. Baldassi. Trieste, Italy. So that's why I'm a little lighter skin, northern Italy. So just to make that clarification.
All right, so let's just make it Kevin Baldassi.
There we go.
Let's change the show.
So thank you for having me.
No, pleasure. It's great. I was looking forward to this. But folks out there, if you know, Kevin and I have been kind of going back and forth, and all of a sudden we found out that we're going to be at this convention. And, you know, this is a great place to do a show. So we're going to get started. Here's what I thought would be interesting to do just to start off. Kevin also has a podcast at KWB Radio. Both Kevin and Joe are on the podcast together. They're both at about 68 episodes, so you've been doing it for a while. But here, I thought it'd be interesting to find out why you guys started a podcast individually. Let's start with you, Kevin. What was your reasoning for starting one?
Well, I think Joe's not going to like the way I'm starting on this one, but the reason I started it was because my best friend Joe here, we met back in 1994, spring of 1994, to bring it back. And I was a freshman in high school, and he was 2 years ahead of me, and I was thrown onto varsity. I have no idea why I was a freshman on varsity. And he put his arm around me, and he took care of me that first year. And he was the only guy on varsity who would talk to this freshman. No one else wanted to talk to this little lonely freshman. So I owe a lot to Joe and for everything he's done in my life and my career. So back in 2014, we started KWB Radio, and we... I said, you know what, I can't start a podcast by myself. I knew my strengths and I also knew my weaknesses. One of my weaknesses was I couldn't host a podcast by myself. So I thought immediately of Joe and I said, you know, this is what he went to school for. And he's got the voice for it. If you listen to our podcast and you listen
Absolutely.
Today, you'll hear his voice already. And he's got velveteen pipes. And for me, I said, he's got the gift of gab and he's got the gift of interviewing and interviewing people. And I said, for this to work and interview the best in the world, just like you do, I knew for myself I needed him to be along with me. So we started it just like you to try to inform people and try to bring people behind the scenes and guests and like you have and just have a conversation. You know, we talked about before, hitting is a conversation. We just like this podcast. We love the podcast platform. Is, you know, we feel like we just have a conversation like all three of us are having today. And I started it because, you know, I knew that if I got him involved in it, then eventually I knew that he would be able to branch out one day and be able to do what he really wanted to do. He's well-versed in a lot of things, and here we go. We got 1% Better Podcast that's alive today. So that's why we started it.
And it's very good because I listen to every episode. I learn something all the time. Joe, why'd you pick 1% Better? You know, why that podcast? And what was your interest in doing it?
Well, thank you. You guys are very kind, obviously. If I have any skill at all for it, I think it's because I lived in the world of both baseball and broadcasting simultaneously for so many years. I remember in high school, I was asked to help broadcast some games in the summer. Going back years before that, I was playing wiffle ball games at my grandmother's house. And I would be a part of a winning rally in the game at 10 years old. And then I would immediately run up to a family member who got the game-winning hit with just a fist. And I'd stick the fist in their face and say, tell me about that hit. What was going through your mind as you got a hit off of Aunt Debbie? And I'm literally interviewing my cousin Andrew, who got a game-winning hit in a wiffle ball game. I was always drawn to that ability to kind of broadcast and to, you know, Pete, if you think about it, like to live two lives simultaneously, like you're playing, but then instead of journaling, I always wanted to do an audio journal. Self-facing, it was always helpful to me to talk. If I, you know, people say, oh, you like to talk. I do, but not to hear myself talk, but it helps me talk things out. So I know today, just talking to you guys on the air, I'm going to learn some things about my thought process. I'm going to clarify it. And I think as far as 1% better, I'm just always interested in improvement. In my classroom, I don't think there's enough time. I feel like when I retire after 30 years in the classroom, I won't have done enough. I feel like there's just a bit of me that's always wanting to get better. So when I thought about progress, I got attracted to this idea of how can we make progress sustainable? And, you know, I'm a big person when it comes to improvement, but you think about weight loss, you think about fitness, you think about things. You could do crash diets and then go right back. But what can we do to sustain it? And what I found was this idea of 1% every day. 1%, 1% the next day. And then over time, you don't recognize yourself in a year. It takes an incredible amount of patience to wait for those results. They don't come quick, but what I found is that they last. So that was the idea and kind of the impetus. And whether it's a cup of coffee trying to get better at it, I was always interested in that. Now I find myself unpacking kind of the mindset, language, and behavior of improvement with whether it be an author, a chef, or a school teacher.
Yeah, and if you haven't heard 1% Better, you got to listen to it because you bring in some of the top leaders in general, not, you know, in business and sports, you know, so you're teaching, and I want to get to that in a minute, but before I do, we're all three friends of Sheets at the ABCA. I want to give them a shout out because I beat them to it. I got you guys on the show together, all three of us at the, you know, National High School Coaches
Setting
Convention, so we're one step ahead of them.
Yeah.
We saw his good friend here. He was here from the ABCA.
Got Bart, I saw Bart earlier.
Himself, yeah, Bart was here. Yeah. You know, we're talking for a little bit. He just headed to another convention to visit with him. But in talking to what you said, tell me about, Joel, some of the leaders that you've interviewed. It'd be interesting to find out what you think some of their similar traits are that makes them very good leaders. That, you know, some of the interviews you've had.
Yeah, it's a good question. You guys have pointed to it where, just because I'm an English teacher doesn't mean that, let me put it this way, I think that's the only subject that allows you to pull from every world. So you're teaching math, you're really locked into a math world. Science gives you some outside-the-box stuff, but when it comes to English, you're talking about speaking, listening, writing, and thinking, and some reading. So you then, that's your skills, but you can pull from the world of science. You can pull from math. You can pull from leadership. So I always was just drawn to that idea. So when I have people on, I'm intentionally trying to pick diverse people. So I've had people that, Chris Voss, a hostage negotiator. How does he use language to save lives? I have Sheila Heen. She's a Harvard professor who wrote a book called Difficult Conversations. How can Kevin and I work through our differences when it's uncomfortable? And we referenced that on the plane talking about colleagues of ours. How can this guy or this woman have a difficult conversation with her boss? You got Seth Godin, somebody who's really sought after, talking about marketing, but kind of making it human. And then you got guys like Kevin on episode 8. You got Sheets on the podcast, trying to dip a toe into every water, because my philosophy is, from when I started the program, I can learn from the gentleman who owns the hardware store just as much as I can learn from Daniel Pink. And, you know, and I've had them both on in the sense of we have something to learn from everybody. That's my philosophy.
Excellent. And Kevin, you've played for some great managers. You've coached with some. What do you see as some traits that managers have in the game of baseball that makes them good at what they do?
Yeah, that's a good question, Pete. I think the best managers I've been around have been tremendous communicators. They have poured into the person. They really want to get to know you. They spend the extra time to do that. So for me, it's kind of like they didn't write up the lineup card and they didn't talk to you for a month and a half. No, they were truly vested in who you were, and they walked around the clubhouse. They walked around stretch at BP. They put touches on you constantly throughout the day. How's your family? How's your girlfriend? How's your wife? How are the kids? Like, no matter what they, you know, your situation you're in, and they truly wanted to know what was on your mind every day. And not every day did you want to talk about it, but you knew that they were there. And so that was a big thing about what I do now too. I learned from them is, you know, you coach the person first and the player second, and the guys, the good ones I had, were more interested in you as a person than they were you as your shortstop or your four-hole hitter. Mm-hmm. Because they knew if they invested in you as a person first, and they really knew that, hey, listen, my skip, he cares about me. Well, maybe I'll listen to him when he has a suggestion about my stance or a situation in a game. And again, going back to the old, hey, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And for me, I learned a lot from that, because it's like, man, I'll play for a guy who really cares about me. And not just about me to win a ball game, but like actually genuinely cares about me. So that's one big thing that really stood out for me. The good managers I had really cared about me.
I tell you what, I'm proud, and I'm going to ask this question. I'm proud to be American, you know, but I'm also proud to be Italian. And when I look at the Italian community and I look at baseball and the Italian managers, I really, you know, I have a belief. I want to get your guys' opinion. You know, the Italians, like many other nationalities, but the Italians especially, because I grew up in Italy, have a passion for their family. You know, they're family oriented. Some of the things you're talking about, you know, they have those things. And it just seems like, you know, you look at Lasorda, La Russa, you know, you look at Joe Torre. I mean, all the Italian managers, great managers, they have these traits about caring for people. When you guys grew up, did you have that with your families? And is that what carried into...
I'm laughing, thinking of all the Italians I grew up with, and I'm gonna say that it's you've been identifying some of the best Italian communicators.
Or your parents?
Yeah, right? But I think when we speak of my parents, we have to be full disclosure and know that, you know, the most Italian family member I had, my father, would not necessarily be the first person coming on a podcast. He was a leader. He is a businessman. But I can't look you in the eye, Pete, and say that he is arm around you like Lasorda, more like Lasorda in his fiery moments.
Sure.
So I think what you're picking up on is a pattern recognition, which, you know, you're looking for as a proud Italian. And I think it's there, but I think you'll see it in all nationalities for sure. I just think that it's a beautiful thing that connects to your heritage, and I love that about you. But yeah, I have a lot of work to do. I think our parents do great things for us. And I think our parents give us some things that we need to overcome, kind of like the pearl in the oyster, right?
Yeah, right.
You have a little piece of sand in there, it makes a pearl. We have that in our backgrounds as well. So I know what you're saying.
Kev, I'm going to bounce this off you, and you can answer that question too. But what I want to ask you is, in the last 10 years, 15 years, what are some of the coaching skills that you've changed? Some of the things in coaching that you did, you know, maybe did it 10 years ago, now you're not doing now, you know, why'd you change them?
Great question. First and foremost, when I started more than 10 years ago, we were talking about this on the plane too, I think on the way over, was I was a switch hitter when I played, and I only knew two swings, two ways of hitting. It was my left side and my right side. So when I started doing lessons, for me, it was like, hey, if you're a righty, you hit like this. If you're a lefty, you hit like this. And I really didn't have any scope in terms of, like, what else was out there, because I had certainly tried a lot as a player, but I only found a couple ways to do it right. So for me, I only had a couple plays in my playbook when I first started. So the biggest thing I learned and what I do now compared to then is I have a Rolodex of different ways to do it, countless ways to do it, because I've been around countless hitters. Mm-hmm. So people are like, well, how'd you learn all that? I said, I listen, I ask good questions, and I observe and try to be a world-class listener, because Pete, you may have something that you got going on, and I'm like, wow, I've never even thought of that, but it works for you. And then maybe 5, 6, 7 years down the road, some guy reminds me of you, like, oh, you remind me of a guy 5, 6 years, you know what, had the same exact problem, try this. You know, so for me, it's just kind of really being flexible. I've learned to be flexible. I have principles. I have those non-negotiables in hitting. For example, timing. Timing is, you know, number one thing for me in hitting. So That's a non-negotiable. Like, if you're going to argue with me, like, timing's not important.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to even argue with it, because, you know, across the street, we're looking over here. Ask a big leaguer. Like, if timing's not important to a big leaguer, he's selling beers. He's not in the batter's box.
Right.
You know, so for me, it's principle-based. And then I'm very flexible on my philosophy because of the fact that, you know, I feel like I try to adapt to the philosophy of the hitter. And if I'm going to adapt to the philosophy of the hitter, then I can be really flexible in my terminology and flexible in the way that I present material to them, because it's their career, not mine. And so for me, the biggest thing is I've learned to be very flexible in my philosophy, but staying pat on my principles.
Joe, anything?
Well, I've watched his evolution, and he's watched mine, so it's been incredibly fun to watch that. One thing Kevin has helped me a lot with, and it's a lot of things, but it's really coming to the forefront now, is trying to simplify things. I'm a guy that sometimes I'll read a piece of literature, and I'll say, it seems simple, what's complicated about it? And when I really zero in on Kevin, he's doing the reverse. He's taking the complicated mechanics of swings, complicated mechanics of a mentality or a psychology, and he's saying, how can we make it simple? He's famous for saying it's simple, not easy,
right?
To paraphrase. So what I've been trying to do is get to simplicity. And the thing that I've been working with my students and the people that I mentor, 2-step process. What do you want? Decide what you really want. And number 2, what's the best plan to get it? And I think if you think about it like that, it really simplifies the entire process. And what you find a lot of times with young athletes is they really don't know what they want. It's like that Cheesecake Factory menu. You look at the menu and you're like, I'm paralyzed. Do I get the poppers? Do I get the nachos? I don't know what to do. My students say, I stare at the Cheesecake Factory menu for a half an hour. I say, it's not going to hurt anybody's feelings if you get the wrong thing. So the first step is deciding what you really want, and then action. Earlier, I didn't answer your question, well, what's a trait that high performers have? They're people of action. Because I could read a book all day long, but if I don't start moving in that direction, I can't change course. So I've really learned a lot of that from Kevin, and I'm not afraid to reflect and change. That's something I've always been proud of.
What's the toughest thing for you guys working with athletes? What's the hardest thing working with, whether it's a professional athlete or whether it's a, because you guys are, you know, you're working, Joe, you were at the high school level, you work with guys from young kids to older professionals. What's some of the hardest things to deal with, and how do you deal with some of those?
Ooh, how much time do we have, Pete? I mean, there's so many ways you can go,
yeah,
right? And you know
one.
That as well. Yeah, I mean, for me is faith that you know that what you believe in will work for you. I feel like there's a lot of convincing that has to be done on my end. I don't know about you.
So it's more mental.
Yeah, it's totally more mental. It's more like, and we talked about on the plane too, I'm more of a guy, I get this from my mom, where it's kind of like, I get the love it or shove it attitude.
Yeah, I knew there was an Italian thing.
Yeah,
you're getting
it
from your mom.
So it's a love it or shove it attitude. It's kind of like, I always thought that I was better than I actually was. But again, the guys across the street, those guys think they're the best athletes in the world, whether they are or not. And so for me, a lot of the things that I come up against a lot, to answer your question, is having faith in what they actually believe and what they can actually do. And they have the talent, but the talent, as you're talking about, only goes so far. It's the mental capacity of actually believing you can actually do it. And I would rather have a guy too cocky than a guy that's kind of like tiptoeing through. It's a lot easier to pull you back than to push you forward. that makes sense.
Joel, so you've dealt with a lot of leaders. I mean, that was awesome. And I got to know, humble, cocky. What did you see in these leaders?
In the patterns for leaders? Never cocky. You know, I was thinking about a definition for cocky and arrogant recently, and I think that my students and I stumbled upon it together, which is kind of like a confident person is out there searching for answers, believing they could find them, and a cocky person thinks they've already found all the answers. Mm. And I think that's my first ever original thought, Pete. Like, I read everything from books, and I just steal them and put them on Twitter, but that came out organically during a conversation with my students. And it just felt right. So no, I don't see people that are powerful leaders. If I could though, speak to Kevin's question he just mm-hmm. had. The hardest thing for me, and we did speak about this recently, is in 20 years of education and coaching and teaching, I feel comfortable with what goes on in my classroom. You know, I feel like I'm learning and I'm putting on a good product for 40 minutes, and then the bell rings, and then I lose all control. Mm. And what I'd really like to do in the next 10 years of my profession is find a way to extend my reach in some way without being invasive to their lives, where when the door closes, I feel confident that they're doing the right things, that the lessons I said stuck with them. It's that feeling of you know, we see athletes walking throughout here, this hotel, their coaches have a great program going. When they leave the coach's watch, what's happening? Mm-hmm. And they talk about character being when no one's watching.
Yeah.
Sometimes character is when other people are watching and peer pressure is involved. And it's not only when people aren't watching, because sometimes it's easier to do the right thing when no one's watching. What about when there's a crowd and it's hard and someone's not? So I just feel like that piece of the puzzle where can they remember something I said? I'm that teacher from the sitcom as the bell's ringing. I'm reaching out and I'm going, hey, wait, one more thing. And I'm just trying to get one more word in because it's just such an impermanent thing.
What about when they're gone? What about when they leave the class? You're done in 4 years. Your guys are done with you. It may be in professional baseball. How important is it to follow their careers? What's your recommendation to the coaches out there, not just in the U.S. but around the world, because we've got people listening from all over the world? I mean, is it just baseball and then it's over with, or should we continue to follow in their careers?
Well, I mean, it's impossible to know how to master that, right? We can try it. The first piece of advice I give is actually a little bit of acceptance, you know, the idea that not everyone's going to come back, that not everyone's going to be able to say thank you. Kevin and I shared some stories about how hard it is sometimes for a young person to properly thank a mentor, whether it's shyness or not realizing that that's the expectation. But then keeping in touch with them is incredibly difficult. And the old cliche about teaching and coaching is you hope that you're affecting eternity. You don't know where your influence stops. But if you're going into teaching or coaching, you have to be okay with the fact that you may never hear from that person.
Right.
You may be affecting their life positively, but you may never hear from them.
All right, now we've all had them. We've had players, we have kids in class. They're just not up to par in what they're trying to accomplish in the classroom, or they're not up to par on the field. We've all had to have that talk with them. What's your recommendation when you sit down with a player or with a student and you've got to tell them that maybe this isn't for them? You know, where do you start? How do you deal with that? Not an easy thing. Well, I've had a couple players in independent ball. You know, you could call them in the office and tell them. A lot of times I hear, I hear a lot of excuses. You know, well, we had to do this. This is why we're releasing you. Well, that's not really true. Yeah. You know, they use it as an excuse. And I think that's being very dishonest to people. When's the time to really tell them, you know, hey, maybe you might want to, you know, maybe you want to tell me, hey, Pete, podcast, it isn't for you. You know, maybe you need to look in another direction, right? Hey, but it's better to hear that and to say, okay, maybe you need to work at it harder, do something different. But, you know, that's not easy, you know, to tell people that they're not as good as you think, as they think they are.
Yeah. We were talking about the plane in terms of, it sounds like we had 2 hours to talk on the plane.
We should have done a podcast on the plane.
Yeah, seriously, we had no earbuds in. And
no
we
headphones
were,
on the plane, man.
We went 1996 conversation on the plane, but we, before the internet. But, like, for me, and to answer your question, Pete, I think it's a great point to bring up because, you know, we were talking about difficult conversations. He brought it up earlier in the show. And I feel like as a coach, in order to have a difficult conversation, you need to build trust, right? So how do we build trust? That's always the big question, how we build trust. And kind of going back to what I talked about earlier is building relationships with them. So I can have a difficult conversation with a client. Joe, you can have a difficult conversation with a player. Pete, you can have a difficult conversation with a player. if we build relationships prior to that. So if we build that relationship, we start building that trust, and within that trust and that time spent, I always say, Pete, like all it takes is 5 minutes to change someone's life.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that many times from you.
Yeah, so if we, there's a lot of 5 minutes in our days, right? Yeah. There's a ton of 5 minutes. So if we're going to sit there and I'm going to take advantage of as many 5 minutes as I can throughout the week, throughout the months, throughout the season, when we do come upon difficult conversations, whether it's we're releasing you, sending you up and down, or, hey, listen, we're going to have to sit you down because of whatever, discipline you, or just we got to give you a day off or whatever, that trust that we built with those relationships gives us permission. That's a big word for Joe. It gives us permission to have that conversation. They don't need to like it, but we're hoping because of that time we spent building those relationships that they respect what we're going to tell them. And I'm not big on sugarcoating it. Again, going back to love it or shove it.
Right to the point.
Right to the point, because that's what I didn't like as a player, to your point. Right. I didn't like when a manager brought me in and skated around the issue or made some excuse of why I was getting sent up, set down, or sent out. And so I just tell me the truth. Like, I don't have to like it, but I would rather and I would respect you more if you would tell me the truth of why. You stink. We have too many numbers. You are a roster filler. Whatever the case may be, tell me that. I may not like it. Probably not. First time I got released, I cried, bawled my eyes out. And ironically, that was the first time I flew first class because a person at the front desk was seeing me cry all day. Yeah, they felt sorry for me, so I went first class home, and my mom picked me up at the airport. So anyway, so like that's it, and wrap that up. Like for me, it's like you build those relationships, get that trust, and all of a sudden you can say what you need to say in that moment and being very direct, and they will hopefully respect you more for it.
Business and sports, pretty similar. There's a lot of things that, you know, I always see, you know, like even in business or in tournaments that we run or anything we do, it seems to be the small things matter. So whatever we do, it's not the big picture all the time. It's you know, you show up to your room and there's a note in your room with a chocolate inviting you to somewhere, or I just see different the little things that people do to make people others feel comfortable. What are some of the things you guys do to make your students comfortable, to make your players comfortable? There's something different that nobody else does that can give some guys ideas out there.
That's a beautiful question, and yeah. I do try to do that. I know I've seen Kevin do it in the cage and different ways outside the cage. For me, I'm reading a book right now called The Art of Gathering, and it actually is a book all about how to make reunions and events and meetings more meaningful. And it's a beautiful book by Priya Parker, and I'm hoping to have her on the show. Reason I mention it is I have something called Alumni Classroom, and it's coming up on December 20th. It's a third annual where graduates of my high school come back for one more English class.
Oh, yes.
And it started with two students who said, I wish we could have class one more time, which in and of itself blew me away. The fact that they'd want to do that. And then I said, well, let's say yes. Let's come from a place of yes. I just told you successful people are people of action. I better be a person of action. So the first year was great. The second year was better, but I don't want to rest on that. So I'm reading this book to try to make that event special. Can we get t-shirts? Can we have a keynote speaker? Can we do some weird, unusual things that are only proprietary to that event so that we can say people like us do things like that? And this year, in my classroom for my seniors, my very first thing I did day one of class is I handed them a handwritten invitation to Alumni Classroom 2019. So they said 365 days ahead, there, I want you to know that I want you to come back this. Take out your phone, put it in there. It's on December 21st, 2019. We're hoping to have over 100 people for Alumni Classroom 4. And rather than here's the list of rules, here's all the things you can't do in my classroom, here's where we're building towards. And it seems to have really paid off. The kids have bought in, for lack of a better word, and a real classroom community. And I hope that's a small piece of it.
That's a great idea. What do you think?
It's to kind of ride on his coattails.
And by the way, I'll interrupt you in a second. He's on his 68th episode, and I think everyone I've heard, the people he interviews, have a book. And he's read every book. Okay, so, I have trouble reading one book, you know, in the last 10 years because, you know, I got to hear. So this will be the next question I'm going to bounce off here because, you know, I want to find out a lot of your students, how do we teach them? This will be the question after you answer, Kev. How do we teach kids that are visually, that are better at listening, that are better at, you know, different ways of learning skills? So go ahead. I'm going to let you finish.
That's great. Again, on this like plane ride from heaven that we just took over here, we were talking exactly about that. And, you know, for me is I'm a big, you talk about handwritten notes. I'm a big handwritten note guy. Thank you cards, you know, thank you.
I got one of those, by the way. Yeah, yes, that was impressive.
Well, thank you for having us. And another one's coming after this, Trust me, because I think it's just, it's taking the time. Again, we talked about the 5 minutes. It's taking the time in those 5 minutes to really show your appreciation, your gratefulness, your thankfulness for people. And that's something that I didn't have early on in my career. We talked about that earlier, me and Joe. Privately, it's just things that have built over time. And there were things, you know, I think back here, I was here 16 years ago, and I remember how I was at that time 16 years ago in St. Louis playing ball. And things as we mature, it's certainly you can mature in certain ways and different ways. And for me, a lot of it was the gratefulness part. It's like, well, I get to, like you're saying, Joe, is like, I got to play baseball. I get to be here with you guys today. Like, how cool is that? Like, everybody's in a different walk of life. People are 9 to 5 and they're grinding it out. I think like a lot of our parents did back in the day. Like your dad, Joe, is still grinding out in the restaurant. And my dad's been retired for 18 years, but he grinded it for 33 years for the state of New Jersey. And so I chose a different way of making a living, and everybody has their choice. But for me, it's handwritten thank you cards, text messages, calls, putting touches on clients and say, for instance, we went up to the room and I took a picture from our room of St. Louis, and you talked about earlier about the USA team, National 18U team. Well, one of our players is Jack Flaherty, who's the number 4 starter for the Cardinals across the street here. I texted it to Jay Flair. I said, where's your statue? You know, just as a joke, and texted right back. It's like, you're in the loo. And it's about relationships we talked about earlier. So for me, it's the handwritten notes, it's the text messages, the touches, and not only being like, hey, how's your swing? How's your family?
Yeah.
What's on your mind? How are you doing as a person? So for me, it's those personal touches.
Yeah, I didn't realize you did that, because I did the same thing with one of my former players.
From here.
I sent a picture of the stadium. And he's a college baseball player right now, and I just happen to know he's a huge Cardinal fan, and he's the first person I thought of. I think most of the coaches that would listen to this show probably know that about their players, right? You're not listening to a show like yours if you're not growth-oriented, I would think.
Right.
You're not someone who doesn't know that Justin's a Cardinals fan. Now, the missing piece is what we keep coming back to. For me, action. It's one thing to have the thought.
Yeah.
Oh, how many times have you heard this? Oh, I should have sent you a picture. And that's great, but if you want to be elite in any way, whether it's relationship game or otherwise, it's not that big a difference from the elite and the good. Good to Great is my favorite book title of all time. Well, you want to be great? You don't think about sending the blender to your aunt. Send the blender, even if it's going to be $68 plus shipping and handling. Don't say afterwards, I wish I sent the blender, or in our case, the cappuccino maker. Do it. And it's not always going to be a great idea, and it's not always going to be well received. But you get back that text from the kid with the heart emojis, and he's like, that means something. And now we're, I don't know how many, 800 miles away, and my geography is not good. I don't know if that's close. But he's thinking of me, and I'm thinking of him.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love to hear that stuff. Now, you guys are going to be on stage here at the convention. Tell the audience a little bit about what you plan on doing. You don't have to give it all up, but give the audience a little bit what you plan on talking about on stage and how you're going to do it, and maybe some of the tips that you might give.
So now is not the time to tell you that we have no idea what we're going to talk about.
I figure, because you guys are great at improvising, and you're very good at what you do. You don't really have to. You just need to go up there, and you'll know what you're going to do, right?
That's partially true, partially false. But, yeah, I think – and it's knowing who you are, too. And this is a great teachable moment, I feel. It's like, for me, I can't sit and write notes and have a speech all planned out and try to memorize it. I can't do that. For some people, that's fine. It goes back to my coaching philosophy that, again, you have to individualize your coaching and try to match up and meet them where they're at and coach them the way they learn. So for me, I'm just like show and go, which used to drive him absolutely bonkers, but now he's staying pretty cool right now, Joe. He's staying pretty cool, and I haven't told him hardly anything about what we're gonna do, but what we're gonna talk about is hitting as a conversation, and that's the title of our talk tomorrow. And we're gonna talk about, especially for the coaches here, is really how to have a conversation with your hitters. social media is littered with, and Pete, you see it, Joe, you see it, I'm sure the coaches listening, you see it, littered with all these drills and different things. And I showed him something today, and he almost fell out of his chair and on Instagram. And it's just like, and I always say, like, why are there so many hitting coaches but so few good hitters? We've talked about it on your show, Pete, earlier.
Yeah. And that's great hitting coaches.
Oh, it shouldn't, if there's so many hitting coaches, shouldn't there be an abundance of great hitters, right? So hitting as a conversation is really how to have conversation with your hitters to try to unlock the potential in their mind about what they think they can do and actually what they can do, kind of along the same lines we're talking about tonight.
Sure.
So we're going to go through different scenarios, give a couple different examples, and Joe and I on the stage, he's going to proctor the whole thing because it's, you know, he's the one that runs the show. But we're going to be able to have good conversation about and give some examples of, hey, how can you have a 5-minute conversation with a kid walking to the bus this upcoming season that maybe potentially can unlock the rest of his season?
You know, it's interesting you said that because, you know, when I grew up, I'm sure both of you, we grew up under people who, you know, and God bless them, they were doing some great things, our coaches. But, man, I seem to be, like, overly mechanical. Just everything mechanics. And I didn't learn a whole lot when I was younger about the mental part of the game, about dealing, you know, with failure and hitting, you know, dealing in counts, you know, how do I make adjustments? You know, what I did is I just went up and hit. And then when I didn't hit well, Kev, I went to my coach. What's the question you get all the time? What did I do wrong?
Yep.
What do you tell your players?
Yeah.
What do you tell your players when they come to you and say, what did I do wrong after they just made it out on a ground ball?
So this is the thing, is I ask them a question in return to their question. Because I feel like the best question or answer to a question is a question in return. So you say, hey, what did I do wrong? My question would be, well, what do you think? What do you think happened there? Because I think if we keep ping-ponging that ball back in their court and force them, because they've been spoon-fed a bunch of stuff. We had Steve Berryman on our episode. He's now with the Rockies, but he was the assistant pitching coach for the Cubs last year, and assistant pitching coordinator, I should say. And we had him on our show on KWB Radio, and he was talking about, too many kids are spoon-fed, and we couldn't agree more. And like what you're talking about. Like this, if you say, what's wrong? What's going on? What's happening? What did I do? Well, what do you think you did? Best thing in a cage is like, how did it look? Well, how did it feel? You know, continue to push it back in their court. Teach them to teach themselves, because they've been fed a ton of information. I always say, like, hitters are drowning in information but starving for wisdom.
Yeah,
well, the wisdom comes from, right, Pete? Wisdom comes from they figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from.
Now, I don't know if a lot of coaches listening coach low-level baseball. I'm sure you have wide range.
Yeah.
I want to speak to the lower-level programs, meaning...
Which, by the way, not to interrupt you, is probably the most important level, in my opinion. Mm.
Well, yeah,
because you can't get them there
without a doubt. If you don't ever want to be someone's last coach.
Yeah.
And I think when I speak to lower level, what I mean is people that are coaching as passionately as Kevin and you, but coaching athletes who aren't as skilled yet. That's what I mean by lower level. Even if it's high school, there's a lot of high school coaches listening. My niche has been coaching players that necessarily weren't the greatest. Well, true to form, you guys got me thinking today, and talking is making me kind of think about a few things. And one thing that comes to mind is a lot of my student athletes, they never ask me what I did wrong. And I think by talking with you guys and hearing you guys talk, I think it's because a part of the job that's overlooked sometimes is building confidence in players that never had it before.
Mm.
You know, when I think of my last 3 years at Bronxville, kids did not run over to me and say, what did I do wrong? The bulk of my job from a psychologist and a coaching standpoint was filling them with confidence and courage, was making them feel better about themselves, was changing the rubric. Our rubric of success isn't to win 20 games, and you don't have to go 3 for 4. So if you want to ask me how you did, what you did wrong, I'll help you. But let's get ahead of that early and talk about what it's going to mean to be successful in this program, what it's going to mean to be successful at the plate. And I think you guys are working with pro and elite level, and they should be asking that because they're trying to go from good to great. But if you go from someone who's insecure to confident, that's a different jump. And I enjoy that.
You know, that's what I love about both you guys. I mean, I know it's probably the wrong word, but you're really heavy thinkers. And that's what makes you, I'm sure I can figure out a better word than heavy thinkers.
I like it.
But, you know, because you really delve into what you're working on and to understand it. And I think that's why I listen to your shows. Now, I got to ask you, Kev, you said, because I love the part about the questions. Early on in my coaching career, I didn't ask a lot of questions. In the last 10 years, I asked a ton of questions back to the player, exactly like you're saying. But I did it because I learned on my own this is a better way to do it. Nobody taught me. Where'd you get it from?
10 plus years of doing lessons
over and over.
A cage. Over
so
and over. With an 8-year-old, with a 15-year-old, with a college player, with a kid who couldn't turn his back foot because he had some sort of brain disorder, to a kid that just really couldn't understand it, to a kid that was elite, but he didn't have the work ethic. And like just all those lessons and countless hours. You know, the famous thing is the 10,000-hour rule. We won't get off into the argument of that. But in terms of just putting the time in.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't know what the time was. It was just a paycheck. I needed to eat, you know, and it was an off-season job. And I was starting the academy, and I just didn't know where I was going to go. But looking back on it, that's where I learned it from, Pete. It was 10-plus years of I always tell guys, like, if you can't teach an 8-year-old, there's no shot you can teach a big leaguer.
I'm with you. High five there, man.
Yeah, right there.
I'm with you. Being at Make Your Own Baseball School for 10 years, that I'm with you 100%, but now what I wanted to ask him and both you guys, I stress the coaches all over the world all the time, because I heard this comment a lot: you got to steal from coaches some great ideas, which I believe in. I think it's you have to. That's knowledge, right? You get knowledge from different people, but I also believe that you got to be creative on your own. You got to come up with ideas and thoughts that are going to work within your own mind. What you're going to do. That's why I asked you the question: where did you decide to ask questions? When did you decide to do that? Because a lot of coaches don't ask questions.
Yeah. And to go off of what you're talking about, of like the lesson piece for me, Pete, was no one was paying attention. So if I messed up an 8-year-old 18 years ago, no one was paying attention to me. If I mess up a big leaguer right now, everybody pays.
Looking.
Now there's ramifications. There's dollars lost. There's careers lost. There's one opportunities. So in terms of throwing stuff against the wall, I could throw stuff against the wall, you know, 10, 15, 18 years ago, and it not work, and no one's hurt.
Nobody knows.
Because the kid's 12, and I don't know how many people are ruining 12-year-old careers. Like, you're just not, because he doesn't even have a career at 12. He's just trying to get through life, right? So for me, I had the blessing of that opportunity to fail and fail often. And I succeeded, because I hear people all the time, like, fail, learn, you know, you go out to fail. Well, if you're learning to fail every day, then you're not going to have a job.
Yeah.
So there were parts where I had permission to fail, but I also succeeded a lot. But man, it's not like right now I'm throwing things against the wall with a big leaguer that I'm not sure it's going to work or not. Like if I'm suggesting, because I never tell anybody what to do, if I'm suggesting something after minutes, hours, days, months of listening and watching and observing, you better believe that I'm 90% sure that's going to help him. And I'm not the best, and I don't know everything. And sure, it's not foolproof. But yeah, all those years of throwing in things against the wall when no one's watching, and that was a blessing in disguise right there.
I think you got to think about style, and I think style comes from who you are, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of work to find out who you are. I'll give some examples. I mean, when I was coaching junior varsity baseball, and you've all seen it, the day of the game you have the school polo, right? Everybody wears the polo. You decide right away, should we tuck it in? Is it a rule to tuck in? Can you do whatever you want? Can they wear dress pants with it? How flexible do you want to be? Well, those are all basic questions. We decided one year to do Hawaiian shirt day of the game. So the kids looked at me like, what? Every kid wore a Hawaiian shirt on the day of the game. And when they said to me why, I said two reasons. I said, number one, everybody's wearing a school polo at every other program throughout the country. We want to be different on purpose. Number two, we want to take it a little less seriously than the New York Yankees. I mean, this is JV baseball. Let's have a little bit of fun, because that was a priority. And number three, it's something that we can call our own. And when we walk up and down the hallways, your peers will say, why are you wearing a Hawaiian shirt? It was an advertising pitch.
Sure,
we never got more than 23 people at a JV game. But they look at the shirt and they say, why are you wearing that? Well, we have a home game today. So guess what happens the next time? You got a Hawaiian shirt. Now Mrs. Smith knows there's a home game. Maybe she's not going to go, but maybe she says to Scott, hey, good luck today. And all of a sudden, Scott forgets he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, and he now feels like a bigger part of the community because he wore a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
And anybody who's listening right now can use that as a litmus test.
Sure.
Because if you don't want to do that, I'm not going to judge you. I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong. If you're like, oh, I'm bristling at that, I don't want my players in a Hawaiian shirt, there's your answer. You know that's not a style point for you. But what can you do in your program, I would challenge the coaches,
that separates you from the program next door? Mm. What is it? What is it that you do? Do you guys run hard 90s all the time? Do you have a certain saying? Do you have a certain style of play? There's got to be something in your program that, that makes it different than the program next door.
Now, you got to show 1% better. Okay, and I, like I told you, I've listened to probably most of the episodes. I'm not sure I remembered all of it, but okay. I've got it, some of it down.
It's good enough for me.
But and as we know, we don't retain that, you know, 100% of what we listen to. How do you know personally, or as a coach, teacher, podcaster, or any of those, how do you know you're getting better every day?
How do you know you're getting better every day? The shortest answer is you don't, right? You don't know. You try to put practices in place, and you try to put systems and habits in place. I'll give a person that we talked about earlier some credit, Dana Cavalia. Mm-hmm. Dana said, and he challenged me on this, he said, in order to get 1% better, you got to have a baseline in whatever category it is. So if you're the best interviewer in the world, that's your baseline. Well, how do you get better from that? You still said you want to get better. So I think establishing a baseline, meaning where are you at today, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today. So I wish I was in better cardio shape, Pete. I really do. But what do? I start today. Yeah. Now, I happen to start in July, so I have a little bit of head start. But that's my baseline. What can I run the mile in now? Or what am I measuring it against now? And then let's check in. And let's not check in every day. Let's not say, you know, yes, we want to get better every day. Let's not get on the scale every day. Let's use the right metrics. Let's figure out what the right metrics are, and let's spend that process. Let's get enjoy that process of kind of finding out how to get better.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like just that delayed gratification perspective. Looking back, like we talked about earlier, like I look back 18 years ago, I'm like, man, I was the worst hitting coach in the world.
Right.
You know, and you look back now and all those, again, those minutes, those hours, those days, weeks and years, and you're like, wow, like I've been trying to get better, but I need to be patient with that process. And there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be some lean years, and there's going to be some all-star years in terms of that. So for me, it's like if perspective does bring a lot out. And there's I was talking to him earlier. I wrote a blog post a couple years ago, Walk With Me, and it was about a walk actually here in this city in St. Louis with a client that was struggling. And I like to take walks with my clients, and I like to take them away from the stadium and out of the hotel and just walk around the city and throw a Starbucks in their hand and say, what's on your mind? Because for me, it's like there's a difference between what are you feeling? Oh, I'm feeling tired. Then what's on your mind? It elicits a lot different response. So the reason I say that is because when you walk, you can have some perspective about what's going on. And when you get outside the bubble of professional baseball, or wherever you are, teacher, or coach, or worker, you know, working in a factory, wherever you're doing, you know, I feel like if you remove yourself from that environment, you start to think a little bit clearer. And if you get asked the right questions, and that's the importance of asking a better question. I think that's also over the years. I've learned a lot from him, still learning a lot from him. Ask a better question.
Yeah, he does very good on a podcast.
He's amazing. He's amazing. And so if you ask a better question, that gets you a better answer in return. So for me, the long-term, the long game here is that perspective that allows you to kind of think about things, and you just learn that way and get better that way. Say, wow, I did get a lot better. I got not only 1% better, but over the last 15 years, maybe I've got 56% better.
Yeah.
And that's a big difference.
Well, again, that's why, you know, Kevin, you got a lot of minor league clients, you got major league clients, you know, but I want to ask you this about, it's an idea that I've had and I've kind of used in the past. I want to get your opinions on it. In education, you've been a teacher 19 years. Somebody evaluates you, I think. Somebody comes in your class and evaluates you. Kevin, have you had, you know, you tell coaches when you run a practice or when you do something, have a mentor come out, watch how you do something, and then truly get an evaluation, an honest one. I mean, why aren't we doing enough of that or more of that?
That's a loaded question. You want to start with that?
And what you think about the idea? Maybe you could add on it.
For me, it's you hit on something I'm really passionate about. I do take the opportunity to actually get outside of my classroom and watch others when, and this is a key piece, when they want it. I'm not an administrator. I don't have a degree in administration, and I can't technically evaluate anyone, but I can help them if they ask. And I think you probably have seen this. They're extremely hesitant to invite someone in their room.
Right.
If they respect you, sometimes they're less likely to have you in the room. if they don't respect you, they're more likely because they think, well, I can teach better than him. Yeah. But if they value what I do, sometimes they're there. I think being self-reflective is something that we have to work on a daily basis. I still work on it every day. How am I doing, right? How am I doing? Right. Trying to ask that honest question. And sometimes, you know, you simple example, you can't see your own label if you're in a jar. Same thing. You need someone to look at your performance. And it all gets back to what Kevin said earlier. If you don't have trust in that person, it's not only a fruitless exercise. Fruitless means you're not getting anything out of it. It's worse than that. You're getting negative results out of it if there's no trust. So I think, you know, Kevin has had many years of watching other coaches. And then he gets people from me kind of on the outside sector come in and just notice some things and say, hey, did you realize that what you did with that kid? And he always says no. And that's kind of going back to an earlier question. That's why I'm here. He's too humble, Pete, to give any kind of credit out for himself tomorrow. So I'm going to sit in one of these chairs on stage. I hope my microphone's loud enough. I want to make sure.
I don't think he needs a mic.
I want to make sure he gives himself a little bit of credit for all the things he's done.
Sure. Well, I think once he gets on and starts answering some questions and talking, they're going to realize they're in a different ball game here because he's at a different level than a lot of other guys. All right, now, I got to ask you guys because this has been on my mind and it's something that I've always thought about and I've tested it, but I've always wondered because I put it out there on social media and I've asked coaches, you know, do you do this? What do you think about it? And I didn't get a great response, but I've always thought that we should be evaluating ourselves. You know, Joe, you're an educator. You've got people come and evaluate you and how you teach. You know, have you ever thought about asking your mentors, asking people to come out to games, to practices? You know, I've discussed tape recording yourself, videotaping yourself, you know, because a lot of times we really don't know what we're really teaching all the time, you know, and if we have somebody to evaluate us or even to listen to a tape, how did I say that? What was my voice like? You know, all those things. What do you guys think about that? Should coaches be doing that more often? Because I'm not sure many guys do this.
Well, I mean, you know, you and I talked about the fact that how about giving yourself some credit? You emailed me. You said, Joe, could you listen to this podcast and give me some feedback? And I think so few people do that. And I've done it. And I get people that say it. And I think there's two pieces to it. I think it's from a teaching standpoint, when I'm in the classroom, I get out of my classroom and I go see others. But I think a big piece of that is they got to want you to come in. You're tapping into it, Pete. Your finger's on the pulse. People are very insecure. And again, probably not people listening to this podcast, because if you're listening to this podcast, you're in a club called We Want to Get Better.
Yeah.
And I think you're really tapping into something valuable for people, which is if you stop this podcast today and you said, how can I get better? I think if you say, let me get someone to watch me in my craft, I think infinitely you get better, exponentially better immediately.
Sure.
And then the next step to really put all three of our passions together is to ask better questions, a la Kevin. So instead of saying, come watch me teach, I know Kevin too well. He's not going to just watch me teach. He's going to say, why? What are you looking for? How can I help you better? I'll come watch you teach, but I want you to even ask a better question. What am I looking for during those 40 minutes? He won't just come in. If he comes in, he's on vacation mode. He's just there for entertainment. He'll push me. If I want to get better, he'll say, why am I there?
Yeah, that's true. And I think the other thing, Pete, to that is, and you touched upon it too, about videotaping yourself, is like a lot of coaches in all sports, they sit there and they say, you know, they want players to watch film of themselves. But how many coaches are actually taping themselves and watching? And it's funny, like, I've more recently on Instagram and Twitter and social media, like I've been putting out different things of little pieces of my teaching, and it's funny to watch that because like for me, like I'm sitting there and I'm saying like, hey, listen, you know, like I sit there and like it's amazing how I connect with that guy or the way, like it didn't sound like that coming out, but the way it came out, it's like, wow, that's different. So it's almost like, you know, when you're talking about earlier, like no one can stand the sound of their voice. Like when they hear it, because the voice in our head is totally different than the voice when you hear it. So for me, I think taping yourself, seeing what you do, and then really having an honest evaluation and saying that you're not perfect, then all of a sudden now, yeah, that's a lot easier to interject and to break down film and stuff like that. But in terms of mentors, I've had a ton of mentors, Pete. And I've leaned on them excessively. And I'm proud to be able to be at a point in my career where I can return the favor to a lot of young coaches out there. In fact, I have KWB Online, a coaching mentorship program I have, to be able to give back because, to your point, I'm not here without the help of others.
Mm-hmm. And I want to just say that I heard his mentoring he didn't know this. I was listening to him mentor someone for 5 minutes. I wanted to respect the privacy, but I listened in for 5 minutes, no clue who this guy was, but Kevin's pouring into this guy. So I'm like, people are actually signing up for this. And he's like, yeah, there's a few people out there that might get helped by some of the things I'm saying. And it's incredible. The technology allows them to connect with Kevin, and I'm watching it, and I've been getting it for free for all these years. So I know that that's the secret sauce, and that's why I tag along in these trips to learn from guys like you.
It's at the price that's right for you, no doubt.
Hey, free for all these years, but the bill's coming soon.
For him. His father never lets me pay at the restaurant, so I owe him a lot for the rest of my life. That's the deal we have.
And Kev, that mentorship program, the website.
Yeah, kwbaseball.com. You can find it. Click on the KWB Online Coaching Mentorship, and it'll take you right there, and you can register online.
Cool, because I know there's a lot of coaches love to have that. Sometimes they don't have mentors, you know, so they need to reach out. Now, Joe, you said, you know, I asked you about, you know, checking out my podcast and see how I do and give me tips and all that. It was real easy to do that, and I'll tell you why, and this is why I want to talk about this, because I'm a rookie at it. So when you're a rookie, it's easy to open up and say, Joe, help me out a little bit. But when I've been in it 30 years, you know, and I've got, and I use this example because two ABC Hall of Fame coaches here, two of my mentors, you know, Terry Ayers and Jim Hall, who are both in the ABC Hall of Fame, and many times we go on a trip internationally, they're coaching the teams. Well, Coach Hall, you know, say, Pete, you're going to sit in the stands, take notes, you know, and let me know how I did. You know, I almost fall off my chair. What do you mean, let me? I'm going to tell you how you did, and you've been in the game 40 years, and you've won state championships. But yet he wants you to sit there because he can't see himself in the things he does. So not only is it hard to ask someone to do that when you've been doing it that long, because we all have egos, no matter who we are. Yeah. And, you know, so how do we, I mean, what do you tell coaches that have been in the game 25 years? You're telling them to become 1% better, and yet is anybody evaluating you?
Yeah, that's a tough question. Maybe I'll start with this, Joe, since you seem to be starting with a lot of them. I'll give you some time for the actual real answer to this. But for me, it's kind of like the first thing that comes to my mind, Pete, is humble and hungry. And I don't know if that's just a catchy phrase, and Joe knows I'm not really for rah-rah phrases. But being humble is, and I know, Joe, you're all about flattered and humbled. Like there's two different things, and he rails against that daily when people misuse that. And I agree with you, Joe, but like, being humbled is tough, and actually being humble, I think, is even tougher because there is an ego that goes with it. And I'll say this, and I'm not ashamed to say it, I think I'm one of the best hitting coaches out there. But at the same time, I know that I set the bar pretty high for myself, and if I want to continue to climb up, that I have to lean on people that are way better than me. We're talking about Charlie Manuel. Mm-hmm. We're having posts on our show. You got him first. I'm jealous. I'm jealous.
That?
Anthony Iaposi. So we're having posts on our next show.
A couple times.
Yeah, I know. But like for me, it's like leaning on guys, David Eckstein, to Charlie, to Post, you know, guys out there for me. I'm like, who I trust, that I know they're going to give me the straight and narrow, and they've been through so many more experiences than I have. So for me, I know that I'm good, but I know that I can be better, and so I need that ego to perform, but I also need to be humble in regards to know, like, hey, listen, there's so much out there I don't know, and to stay current, I need to be staying connected with those guys that are at the highest level that are doing what they do, and they do it really well.
You know what comes to mind for me is to pick your customers, pick your students, and pick your clients more carefully. And I don't mean it pessimistically. Nope. I'm going to be real for a second. It's very difficult to change a 25-year veteran, and it's impossible if they don't want to be changed.
Yeah, good point.
And I'll hit it close to home. I have a family member who for a long time I've tried to change because I see what this person is. And I think they can be something even greater. And I have a few things I learned along the way, but when I bring that to the table, the person has an objection. They have, as I think Edison would say, they have a problem for every solution. Stay away from negative people. They have a problem for every solution. So what I've chosen to do is love the person as they are and not try to get them to buy a Mac when they love the Dell.
Yeah. Right? And that's a real story. Why do I have to have it? I'm happy where I am. So if someone wants to get better, absolutely. But without that self-reflection, it's like Southwest Airlines said so many years ago. They kept getting hate mail from the same client. Same client. Everything they had a problem with. I don't like the drinks. I don't like that you're joking during the announcements. I don't like your sense of humor. Finally, the CEO wrote a note to the person and said, "We're going to miss you."
Yeah.
And that's it. We're going to miss you. Five words. The client isn't for Southwest. As Kevin has said 100 times,
good point.
He's not for everybody. And that doesn't come from a lack of compassion. He just has to pick the people who are for him.
You know, that's a great analogy. I'll tell you why. Because how many coaches have struggled with, we've got that bad apple on the team, but he's a great player. And how long do you keep him? How long do you stay with him and try to help him? Sooner or later, if he's not going to change, he's going to hurt your ball club.
Correct.
He can be your best pitcher.
But at the same time, Pete, I had an experience 10 years ago where we won a championship, and we had a bad apple, so to speak, that was an outfielder for us. But we had a really good core group of guys. Mm. So that cancer, bad apple, whatever you name it, talented guy, he was muffed out by a lot of the guys in the clubhouse. And the clubhouse curtailed him, and they managed him, and they kept him under wraps. So it never got down the hallway to the manager's office or my office, the hitting coach. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of that, too, is the environment and the culture and the other people surrounding those type of
good
people
point.
As well.
And
right?
age and stage. If that's pro ball, if that's high amateur level, it's a lot more likely.
Yeah.
You're talking about teens, which I work with, it's harder. It really is. Mm. A lot of times at my level, I tell people and I tell teachers and coaches, unfortunately, the culture in a room or in a team will always be drastically improved by taking away the rotten apple rather than adding in a star.
Yeah.
It's just a different form of math. But I've also been known, and I've prided myself, in giving people second and third chances.
Right.
Sometimes to my detriment, being too compassionate, being too, not trusting, too optimistic. So we could have an entire podcast on that tug of war.
But that's a great conversation because coaches struggle with that. We all struggle through it one way or another. We've all been through it. Now, I know, this could be 5 hours that we talked about. This has been awesome. But I want to address a couple more things and then we'll close off the show. How I'm going to close off the show is any advice at the end that you want to give our coaches, players, or parents in the U.S. and around the world? Anything you want, just something we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
That you just said, I wanted to mention it, but I didn't get a chance to. That's how we're going to end it. But before we do, a couple things. One, how do you identify some of these kids, what kind of learners they are? How do you know they're learning, and what type of learners? Are they visual? Are they audio? How do you know that?
So usually you start at zero, right? But I think you got to go back. You got to start before the starting point and say, are you even curious or open to the idea that you have different learners in your locker room? My way is the highway. I've been doing it this way for a long time. This is the way we always done it. All completely caustic thinking. If you think that way, you can never even acknowledge the fact that all three of us learn differently. Now, the research on learning styles is up and down and back and forth and things. My personal belief is that everybody learns differently, period, end of story. You can call it what you want. You can call it visual, spatial, kinesthetic. I can give you all the buzzwords,
sure.
Pete. But the reality is I like to listen. I've famously said to Kevin, 1.5 podcasts a day. That's my fuel. I told a story the other day. I said, a guy calls me every morning, and I don't pick up the phone because that's my morning routine.
Right.
I don't want to talk. I need to learn. I need to pour into myself. So right now, I'm telling you by my behaviors and by my what I've noticed about myself, I'm an auditory learner. Anyone listening to this is getting that sense.
So as a coach, I've got to be able to identify that. I've been watch, listen, observe, identify each athlete, how they learn?
It would certainly help. It's going to, you'll hear coaches that already driving in their car going, well, how the heck am I have time for that? And that's a lot of what Kevin talks about. You do have time. I guarantee he has one or two tricks of the trade, so I'm going to push it over to him. But I would say, for me, what I can offer to this conversation is the antenna. Are you even open to that idea?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you so in your own culture that doesn't matter, you think you're going to overpower it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me is it's easy to do and easy not to do in terms of individualize and spend that 5 minutes. And a lot of the stuff when we go around and talk at the conventions and stuff, and when I say it, all it takes is 5 minutes to change someone's life, we talked about, and they're like, well, I don't have 5 minutes. So we certainly have 5 minutes to stand in the line at the convention for coffee in the morning. That was like 20-minute line. So you can't tell me you don't have 5 minutes to text somebody. to put your arm around him, to talk to him in your office, outside of your office, on the field or whatever. And I feel like that's the only way to go. There's no one way of doing things. You can't teach them all the same way. So kind of pick up where you left off, Joe. I feel like you got to meet them where they're at in their career. So freshman in high school, scared to death. First time in a big league, scared to death. You know, you got to meet them where, or they're 4 years old and a 15-year veteran in the big leagues. You got to meet them where they're at, because they don't need the stuff at the beginning if they're 40 years old. If they're a freshman in high school, they may need a little bit more salt, less sugar, because of the fact that of where they're at. And I think sometimes that one size fits all. Yeah, they're like, well, it worked for Joe over here. Well, yeah, because that one drill or that one, the way you came down on him, yeah, he responds to that. But the 24 other guys on the roster don't. So you're going to sell out and try to, because your ego, say it worked for one guy, and you're going to disregard the other 24 failures from it. So for me, it's meeting them where they're at and really taking the time intentionally, like you said, to be able to learn how they are. And people say, well, that's too much. That's hard work. Well, if it's hard work, well, you're going to get what you put into it. So if you don't put into a lot into it, you're going to get out of what you, not a lot. But if you put that time into it, then all of a sudden now you're going to get a lot more out of it, because, again, delayed gratification down the road, you're going to be able to 1 through 9, in terms of hitters for me, 1 through 9 knows exactly what they do. There's 9 different approaches. There's 9 different swings and 9 different personalities. And it really comes down to just coach the personality. Don't coach the player.
Great advice, man. I love it. And folks, if you're hearing some background noise, we are live at the National High School Baseball Coach Association. I am here with Joe Ferraro, Kevin Wilson, and Pete Caliendo. Yes, 3 Italians that will be speaking at the convention tomorrow, Saturday. It's going to be a lot of fun. So far, we've listened to a couple speakers. All right, here's how we're going to close it off, and then your last, you know, whatever you want to talk about at the end. Why don't you help me out a little bit and see if I'm the only one in this situation. Been in the game 37 plus years. Started at Mickey Mantle Baseball School 10 years, taught young kids at, you know, young level. Went on from there, Team USA, then from there with independent ball and so forth. And, you know, I get a chance to travel the world and teach coaches and all that. And it's a great passion teaching coaches. And I know the job I do, and I'm confident in what I do. But yet, 37 years in a game, and I walk away a lot of times with these conventions and I go, man, I don't know as much as I thought I did. Am I the only one in this situation? In 37 years, and yet there's so much to learn in this game. And it's not just the game of baseball, but the game of life. I can't be the only one thinking like that.
Well, you better not be. You know, you better not be the only one thinking that. First of all, that twinkle in your eye, I didn't realize where it was coming from. And then I was listening to the speakers here, and I got old blue eyes. So that's the first thing we have to acknowledge.
I got to play that more often.
Yeah, that does wonders for you. It's a fine line, Pete. I love on my show and in my classroom, I love talking about that tension. And in here, where we've tapped into the tension between, I'm good enough, I have something to add, but I don't know it all. I'll tell you, a few minutes ago, we had some guests from Georgia, highly, highly acclaimed programs, coaching first rounders. I coached exactly one first rounder in 19 years. So they did that last month.
Well, then you have top leaders, Seth Godin, who are, you know, all these guys, top leaders.
Thank you.
Aren't you saying to yourself, sometimes saying, wait a second, man, these guys are really good. Where am I at?
Yes, and that's exactly what happened in the span of 5 minutes. I looked at their championship rings. And I had a voice to myself saying, these guys are farther along in the journey than me. I said that instantaneously. And then I paused and I kind of stepped outside of my own self and said, well, wait a minute. They're looking at Kevin and me and saying, these guys got a podcast, 68 episodes, Major League World Series winning managers, coaches and players they're interviewing. They're sitting down with Pete. There must be something that these guys are doing. So it's round and round we go. And I think you got to ask yourself what's required of you as a coach to be your best self. Whether that's an energy question or whether that's a self-confidence question. A year ago, I don't know if I could have came to St. Louis and sat on a stage with him and said, I know I have something to add. But as I take a year to think about how I can help coaches away from the actual field this year, I couldn't be more energized to get on that stage, because what I've learned is I have not the best perspective. I have a unique perspective. Mm. It's only mine. You don't have it, and I don't have yours. Doesn't make mine better, doesn't make it worse. I'm going to give you what I have for 40 minutes, And I don't have to worry about that championship ring. I have a different championship ring. He has a different podcast. We all have different unique strengths.
Interesting. Kev?
Yeah, I mean, how do you follow that up?
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't know. It's easier for me to say, Kev,
yeah,
you're next.
Exactly. I don't know. For me, the only thing I'll add to that is, and I think the only thing I can add to that after that is have a good filter. If you're a coach out there, have a good filter in terms of you can hear so many different things. And at these conventions, you see, you know, the latest drill or a drill, and everybody, there's 600 high school programs going home and trying
technology.
The same drill, right? Yeah. Where it goes back to the individualization, like what do you need? Like Joe was saying, what do you need now? What do you need in your program? Pick and choose, because you can learn from everybody. You may dislike this, and you may think the guy's crazy, and that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion. But if you're really open and truly open, even if you dislike something, if you find something like, oh, I think that could work for even one of my guys, not the entire team, even one of the guys, then I think it's worth it. So you have to have a really good filter for what you're doing.
All right, cool. We're going to end it. Either one of you guys, whatever. Anything we missed that you really wanted to mention to our coaches?
First of all, this has been so fun, and I just love it. The live format has inspired me. I want to do more of that in 2019. I want to encourage all coaches to think about maybe a word of the year. You've heard that idea before, but I'm here to tell you it works for me. It's not going to work for everybody, just like everything Kevin says, but I picked decide as my 2018 word, and we're staring down January 1st. I have to pick another word. Well, decide, let me cut off. That's the root word of decide, comes from the Latin to cut off. I cut off some things in my life. I said no to this, I said no to that, so that I could say yes to a few things.
Hey, I need that.
That was my word. And I think, you know, think about the word that's going to drive your 2019. Whatever word I choose is going to be something that allows me to say, I want to do more speaking, I want to do more live events. Might be someone listening that likes something I said. I'd love to help in whatever way I can. I'm easy to get a hold of. For better or for worse, I return every email, and I'm going to be doing live speaking in 2019, whether they invite me or not. If I have to show up and if I have to speak to a tree until someone listens, I want to get better at it, and I want to try to add some value. So thank you for that opportunity.
Well, thank you for being on the show, Kev.
Yeah, love on people, love on your players. I think that's something that there's not enough of. There's more of. I think there's got people that do a great job of that. But love on people. I think there's just, and you can even take it past the field of play into the world. I feel like there's just so much. You get on social media and you get angst and you get anxiety in some people. But just love on people. Tell your players you love them. And it's okay. You're allowed to do that. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything else. It's just, you know, if you show that you love them and you care about them, like we're talking about before, but use the word like, hey, I love you, brother. Like, just showcase that word and showcase your, you know, outwardly and your actions and your tone and you know, that's what those kids need. They need more of that. And it doesn't mean that you can't love them and kick them in the butt at the same time. You know, you can do more. People are like, oh, well, if I love them, I can't discipline them. No, the discipline comes from the love, but the love is in place first, like we were talking about earlier, before you can have that discipline. So love on your players a little bit more.
All right, man. I'll tell you what reminds me of some of my coaches, they made you feel like you were the best. I mean, you can do anything, and you'd run through a wall for them, and that's what you're talking about.
Yeah,
that's
Charlie
awesome.
Manuel is the best, in my opinion, doing that.
That's awesome. Well, guys, thanks for being on the show. This has been all. I mean, for our audience, so they know, we've got no scripts, we've got nothing. We just went at it and started talking. You guys did an awesome job.
Thank you, Pete.
Well, thank you, Pete, for having us.
All right,
it was awesome.
That is Joe Ferraro, Kevin Wilson. Now, we're going to have all the show notes on baseballoutsidethebox.com. You got Joe Ferraro. Check him out on Twitter, too, at Ferraro Air, and his website, 1%betterproject.com. And then you got Kevin Wilson at Twitter. These guys got a lot of great advice. Kevin Wilson at KWB Radio. That's his Twitter. He mentioned his podcast, website earlier, but we're going to have all this on the show notes. So again, thanks for joining us. This has been a fantastic show from St. Louis, Missouri at the National High School Baseball Coaches Convention. Don't forget, check us out on Twitter at Baseball Out. Also email me at petercaliendo@icloud.com. Love to hear anything you have, any advice about the show, any speakers you'd like to hear. And don't forget, check us out on, you know, Stitcher, iTunes. If you love the show, give us a rating. I want a true rating. I'm not telling you to give us a 5-star rating. I just want a rating. Let us know how we're doing. The rating helps get the show out. So be honest about it. Don't forget, this is Pete Caliendo, Baseball Outside the Box from St. Louis. Hey, we'll see you on the next show. See you later.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.